Hour number two kicking off here in the White Claw Hard Seltzer Studios. Hour two is brought to you by the 37 Club. Go sign up. Support Fan Run Radio. Support our new endeavors. We're trying to do some cool stuff here. Shout out to our members who were at the golf tournament last weekend. We announced our Smokies Night at the end of May. You get free admission there. We'll send you some information on how to RSVP your spot to get some premium content. That's only going to continue to ramp up as we really focus now on just having our game plan in place and having all hands on deck ready to go for football season. That's kind of where we're at now. We got baseball balling right now. We're going to talk to Kirby Connell later in the show. What time are we talking there? 8:40, Bob, for Kirby?
Yeah, 8:40 Kirby's coming on.
8:40 as we check in with Kirby, a friend of the program.
Iron Man,
fresh off the heels of his win against Kentucky. We're going to do some cool stuff. You can join the 37 Club by going to fanrunradio.com/the37club for more details. You get access to our Discord, our events, and you help us continue to grow and sustain and just get some cool stuff, some merchandise. You get unique, exclusive merchandise and discounts. Well worth the price of admission. All right, Sam, hit us with some stuff we missed from yesterday.
Thank you. The Vols landed 4-star wide receiver Adoree' Jackson that we were talking about last night. That's a big, big get for this staff, as Heupel and Kelsey Pope really have, you know, spoken highly of this guy, and a guy that is rising up recruiting rankings, and, you know, I think by the time we'll get on campus here, we'll be a pretty sought-after prospect. Number 80 player in the class, number 12 receiver, won 3A Mr. Football in Tennessee last year. Had about 1,700 all-purpose yards, 27 touchdowns, even played a little bit of defense too. So you're getting a great athlete coming in here. But yeah, Vols continue to tap into that wide receiver pipeline. George McIntyre and Radorius Jackson will be a duo for the next couple years whenever they get on campus.
Bob, your thoughts on the commitments?
Well, like we were talking yesterday, I love the offensive product for this Tennessee team and what Heupel does, and you need weapons to do that. He just keeps stacking the wide receivers. Just hope we can keep them all happy. That's all, over the course of the next few years. But, I mean, it's definitely some options for Nico now, for McIntyre after. I love seeing it. I really do. And it helps them move up a little bit in their ranking in terms of overall recruiting. We know it's a tough battle in the SEC. That I think they moved them up to number 7 in conference, but that's some pretty high cotton you're competing against. So I think nationally they're number 12 overall. So figure if they can stay near that top 10 range or higher, then we're going to be doing good.
Sam, did you watch the commitment video?
I didn't, no.
Bob, did you?
I did not.
Was it a good one?
It's an awkward one. Oh, the parents don't seem happy.
Oh, that's not good.
The mom particularly does not seem happy that
he chose Tennessee.
They chose Tennessee. Yeah, it's strange. Like, it wasn't like full on like LSU-Alabama meltdown. Was it Landon Collins whose mom did that? So
that Copeland kid, I know it's.
Yeah, that was from Florida. That was
Florida kid. But you are right with
was it Landon Collins?
I think you are right with Landon Collins, where he did the commit watch like at the Under Armour game.
No, there was a press conference where the mom just kept shaking her head there, like mad, like that the son had chosen a school. She was like visibly upset. The Copeland one, yeah, like which I mean,
she
I think.
Off.
Well, I mean, I think that Copeland mom ended up being vindicated because he went to Florida, and you know, all the reports were there. It was like, hey, he probably needs to get out of Florida and get away from his crew and go somewhere else, and then like went to Florida and it didn't pan out for him. And I think mama was right, and his career, as far as I know, is pretty much fizzled out. But yeah, the mom wasn't at that level, but she did not seem overly thrilled with her son's decision.
Got a little bit of time to sway her.
Or she's got time to sway him. I don't know. Yeah. But yeah, no, it was awkward. I was curious if you guys had seen the video, but
no, I'll have
I'll
to look
see
at
if
that.
I can find it. Yeah. And show you
some movement on the NFL front, as former number 2 overall pick Zach Wilson on the move, traded to the Denver Broncos yesterday. getting a new start over there in Denver for a late round pick swap, sixth round pick for a seventh, basically. And the Jets are even willing to eat some of Wilson's salary. So they're going to take about $5.5 million and trade him. He'll get a new start over there in Denver with Sean Payton. Who knows? Who knows? Feels very Josh Rosen-y to me.
Yeah. I was thinking, it's funny you mentioned Rosen. I was thinking the same. And, I mean, the fact that the Jets even had to throw a draft pick in as well and say, hey, I mean, it just sounds like, it's almost like you had a boat that you don't want to keep anymore. It's like, yeah, man, I'll fill it up. I'll give you some fuel. I'll give you, you know, just whatever. You know, when you get that close to closing the deal, I'm sure they were just like, let's move on.
Someone said that the only explanation is the Broncos looked around and saw they had a bunch of extra Wilson jerseys. And yeah. Said, hey, you know what? So let's try to do something creative here.
Yeah.
They're going to make him take a number.
I was going to say, how about number? You look good number three.
I like two, though. Yeah. Well, nope.
Come on. Has two really been working for you in your career? You know, if this was Andy Reid trading for Zach Wilson, I think everyone would be like, okay, let's see if he can fix him. Let's see if he can get some value out of him. Sean Payton used to get that benefit of the doubt with quarterbacks. Right. But, like, I haven't seen anybody saying, like, hey, Sean Payton can get the most out of him.
Just seems like somebody Sean Payton can boss around more now.
Yeah, no kidding. I do think for Denver, it's pretty low risk at this point.
I mean,
it's why not give it a shot, I guess. I mean, the kid was an athlete. We know that much, but it's just, does he have enough of the makeup and enough upstairs to really be a frontline player? I don't know.
You
Time
think
will
this
tell.
Shuts the door on them thinking about a quarterback in this draft, though? I think they're just kind of packing it in for the year and just –
No, I would. I don't think so. I mean, I guess they might not end up with a quarterback, but I don't think it's because they have Zach Wilson. Like, at a certain point, Sean Payton's got to start winning. I know he's got, like, ultimate job security right now, but, like, you don't get seven-year rebuilds in the NFL. So, like, if he's going to tank and go next year for a quarterback, like, we talked about it last week, the quarterbacks at the top of the draft, I mean, is Shador Sanders worth tanking for? Like, I mean... So, like, I still think if you can get up high enough to get your quarterback of the future, you go for it. But hell, how
is it J.J. McCarthy, though?
Yeah, no, I don't know what it is. I mean, they were linked also to Michael Penix. Like, how old is Michael Penix compared to Zach Wilson? Are they the same age?
They're
like,
probably the same age.
Is Zach Wilson, like, a year older than him? Like, it's like we're throwing him out. Meanwhile, we're looking at the other guy like, wow, look at this prospect.
Let's see. Zach Wilson's 24, was born August 3rd of 99.
I mean, Penix is 24, right?
Yeah. Yeah, Penix is 23.
Okay.
May 8th, 2000, so.
About to turn 24.
Yeah.
Who else does Denver have currently? Is it Stidham? Is he there now?
I think it's Stidham and Ben DiNucci.
Oh, God.
Wow. Not a great quarterback room.
Ben DiNucci.
Some more NFL news. Matt Ryan officially called it quits yesterday, retired after 15 years. Great career for him. Honestly, feels like one of those guys where it's like, oh, Matt Ryan hasn't retired yet. But, yeah, he makes it official. Obviously, a legendary 2016 season. One of those guys that you feel like is – you'll talk about later on in life. Be like, oh, he was kind of an underrated quarterback maybe.
That's what I was wondering. Is he in the Hall of Fame discussion?
I don't think so, but, like –
I don't think I'm ever going to mention Matt Ryan again in my life. Like, I'll sit around and think, and I'll sit around and talk about him. Is that what you said I'm going to do? No.
The classic game that you're playing, like, all random quarterbacks from, you know, this time period. It's like, Matt Ryan, that'll be one that gets like a, ooh, nice.
The only way he'll come up is if we're talking about Super Bowl choke jobs or, like, random players that won MVP.
That's what I'm saying.
But, I mean, like, I don't know. Like, I think that list of random players that won MVP is pretty short. But I'm not going to sit around and think about Matt Ryan unless he's the answer to a trivia question. Is he a Hall of Famer? I mean.
I just feel like the NFL is pretty generous on Hall of Fame appointments.
Oh, really? I think the opposite. I think of them being kind of stiff to get in the Hall of Fame. Not compared to, you know, like, they're in the middle between basketball letting everyone in and baseball not letting anyone in. But I feel like the NFL – very rarely do I feel like they're just, like, letting people in the hall unless – it's not the Hall of Very Good.
Yeah.
I don't really feel that way. Like, NBA Basketball Hall of Fame is almost just like, hey, did you play for a long time? okay, yeah, you can get in. And baseball's like, hey, no one's getting in anymore. So, yeah, it's somewhere in the middle. But I think Matt Ryan was only a Hall of Famer for 1 year.
Yeah, the 2016 season was electric. But
yeah, I mean, I think he was only a Hall of Famer for 1 year, and, like, that's not good enough to get in. If he won the Super Bowl, you know, maybe that gets him a little extra oomph. But, like, to me, he's not a Hall of Famer.
I just remember how excited I was when the Colts signed him. I thought, this is what they needed. That was a disaster. Absolute disaster.
As we were thinking, it was very funny because you know, of course, that was on the heels of doing the same thing with Phillip Rivers, and that worked out better. You know, Colts at least made the playoffs that year, but as a wild card, as they lost the division. Matt Ryan was a disaster there, though. Like, 'cause he was one of those guys. He had an end of his career like Eli Manning, where you knew he was washed, and like he was just got tired of getting hits, and like he was just skittish in the pocket, and like, yep, you can't be the old man that's skittish in the pocket, and that's what he was. And I don't know if he's a Hall of Famer. He had 2016, but to me, when I look at his career, that's kind of an outlier. It's the only time like he's had any type of accolades outside of Rookie of the Year in terms of like league standing.
I feel like his stats look great.
I think
when you break him down, he's just not as flattering.
I don't know. I just don't care about stats when it comes to quarterbacks, especially like if you're just going to tell me like his yards. And he had, I think, 10 straight years of 4,000 yards, which is nice. That's like good consistency. Like, I think Matt Ryan's very good. I think at times he was great, but to me, not a Hall of Famer. Although, like, we're going to be in a weird spot in the Hall of Fame, I think, coming up soon. So maybe Bob ends up, you know, being right in terms of them just starting to let anybody in. But, like, I think if they let Eli Manning in, the floodgates will open at quarterback, because you're going to look around and be like, hold on, you let Eli in, and you're not letting these guys in. And I do think it's, like, probably more likely than not that they do let Eli in, just because he's a Manning and he's well-liked and he has two Super Bowl MVPs. But, like, when you look at his numbers, like, all these other quarterbacks are going to just, you know, dwarf his numbers. So then we're going to be in a weird spot, I think.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Some NBA news as a bit of a surprising one here, but I kind of am interested by this. The Hornets have requested to interview J.J. Redick for their head coaching spot. Obviously, 15-year NBA vet, hasn't really had any coaching experience, but has been great as an analyst. And, you know, he's gone on to his new podcast with LeBron, kind of breaking down the game. And you can see how much he loves, you know, kind of the X's and O's of basketball and kind of being a junkie in terms of that sense. But you haven't really seen him take a head coaching role. So this one seems interesting for a team like the Hornets, but I'm kind of interested by it.
Have either of you listened to that new podcast they do?
It's really good.
That's what I've heard. Yeah. I have not listened really yet, but good. I've heard it's fantastic.
You don't usually have to cut your teeth in the NBA. You know, if you're a player, a respected player, and you show you have a good basketball mind, you usually get to cut to the front of the line. You don't have to go do the assistant. You don't have to go do the coordinating route like you do in the NFL. Like, you pretty much just get your first coaching job can be an NBA head coach. Now, that's worked with, you know, varying degrees of success. But the Charlotte connection important there, too, if they're trying to really tap into the Duke love and tap into the basketball, you know, North Carolina just as a state. Like, I don't know if, like, Tar Heel fans would be like, hey, I can't root for a Dukie, or if it'll matter there. But, like, it's a name you know. It's a name you respect. And he's shown over the last 4 or 5 years in media that he is a pretty good thinker when it comes to basketball. Does that mean he can coach? I don't know. Does it mean he's even going to get the job? I don't know, but I got no issue with them interviewing him. It's intriguing.
I didn't realize – I read that he interviewed last year. Maybe it was for the Toronto job, really? Too, which I had no idea. This one kind of made more headlines, it seems like.
I'd kind of like to see it happen, honestly.
Yeah, it wouldn't bother me. I think, yeah.
But I do like him as an analyst, though, too, so I don't really know which one I want to see. And I don't care about Hornets basketball.
I like when he's been on, First Take, whatever it's with Stephen A. and
yeah, First
Mad
Take.
Dog. Yeah, and he gives it back to Mad Dog in particular, man.
Yeah, he's not scared of
him. He absolutely dresses him down.
I would also assume that LeBron, this podcast with him and LeBron would probably just be quits if he took a head coaching job as well.
So
it'd be pretty short-lived.
Yeah.
Not super significant here, but Andy Reid, Brett Veach, they both get an extension through the 2029 season. Yeah, Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes are going to keep coaching, winning Super Bowls until 2030, basically. That's about the headline that is.
Reid's highest paid coach in the game. I guess that's tough to debate anyway,
yeah,
right?
Well deserved,
and more nuggies for him.
Remember last football season, the first person that really put it in your head that Reid's going to catch and pass Belichick and is going to be the all-time winningest NFL coach by the time he retires. That's what's on the table for him. And I think that this extension kind of shows that he's at least thinking about it. Because if he coaches 6-7 more years with Patrick Mahomes, he's going to have a real chance to just be the all-time winningest coach. Maybe in Super Bowls, too. I mean, not going to catch Belichick there in terms of six, but there's a chance he gets three more. I mean, would it shock you if he got three more?
I really don't think that's crazy to say he catches six.
I mean, I feel like it's crazy. I'm definitely betting against it, but, like, it's possible at this point. It's possible. We'll see how that roster ages, but, like, Mahomes is going to put him in. You know, we talked about being in just the AFC Championship every year. You can pretty much pencil him in the Final Four.
Gonna have to play Will Levis coming up. Like, that's gonna be hard for him.
The AFC quarterback situation, it actually makes me sick when I look at it, because, like, I'll see these rankings and Will Levis is always at the bottom of it, and I want to get mad, but then I look and I'm like, yeah, you know, the AFC is pretty damn good at quarterbacks.
I have NFC friends too, and that pisses me off. You know,
it'd be great to be in the NFC.
God, I would love to be in the NFC.
You could just have a pulse and you could be a top five NFC quarterback.
Have, like, a winning record and you're a playoff team.
That's disgusting. It's draft week. It's only going to get worse. More talent coming into the league.
Chiefs are going to get, like, a good receiver probably.
My girl Mina Kimes was saying that she wants them to draft Jalen Wright in the third or fourth round.
The Chiefs?
Yeah, and how he'd be a perfect fit there.
I'm sure he would.
Yeah, and I was like, yeah, he would be. It'd be really dangerous. It'd be really annoying, but it'd be good for his career. It's draft week.
Trey Smith, Jalen Wright.
Yeah, I know. I know Trey Smith's on the team. I dapped him up at the airport and said, hey, congrats on the Super Bowl. He's like, thanks, bro. He's like, congrats on you going to the bathroom here in a second. And I was like, see ya. Then I came back and I didn't look at him. It was just walking. I didn't want to have another awkward conversation. I made sure I was, like, drying my hands when I came
awkward
out.
Yeah. High five again.
That way he'd know that I washed my hands.
Hey, what's up, man?
Yeah. Hey, it's me again, just coming out of the bathroom. What's up?
My man. Putting your hand out to him.
It's wet, but it's water. Trust me, it's water. You know, those air dryers, they say that they just it recycles the, you know, the nasty air in there. You don't want to use the air dryers. Mm-hmm. Paper towels, they were out. So, like, you know, don't worry, big dog. This is water and soap. I'm ready for draft week. We'll talk about that throughout the week. Stick with us. It's the morning show on Fan Run Radio.
Ever been the coach who really...
The segment's brought to you by Logo Solutions, powered by SM Athletics. Are you a business owner, a club director, a member of a social or religious organization and have a logo and need merch to help represent your brand, your club, or your mission? Oh, well, I got good news for you. Sounds like you have a problem. Well, I have a solution. Check out Logo Solutions, powered by SM Athletics. From customer apparel to headwear and promotional items, Logo Solutions is your one-stop shop for all of your branded merchandise needs. If you need something put on a towel, they can do it. If you need something put on cups, they can do it. T-shirts, hoodies. We got some new basketball shorts with the Fan Run logo on them. Have you tried those on yet, Sam, from the golf tournament? Have you tried the basketball shorts we got?
I haven't gotten a chance to yet, no. They're nice and comfy.
I haven't gotten to either. I was going to ask you. I was going to ask you if you'd tried it yet.
I'll have to get them on today.
Logo Solutions is your one-stop shop for all your branded merchandise needs, made right here in East Tennessee. be sure to give them a call for all your logo needs at 865-966-3434. 966-3434. Let's stick on the draft. We'll switch gears to baseball. We got Kirby coming up at 8:40-ish. We had talked about the draft being this week. We haven't checked in really in the last couple weeks. What's the latest? What's the 411, Bob? What are the rumors? What's swirling when it comes to the draft? Are we still talking ourselves into some quarterbacks and trades up? Because I saw the over-under in first-round trades at 6.5. So they're expecting a lot of action on Thursday.
Yeah, I think that – and it's a byproduct of so many, I guess you would call them coveted quarterback prospects that are available in the draft. We obviously know about Caleb Williams and Jaden Daniel and Drake May and – J.J. McCarthy, over the last few weeks, has come out of nowhere to be in the conversation for a very high pick, and then all of a sudden Michael Penix in the same boat, too. So, and then there's Bo Nix. So, I mean, literally, there's a half a dozen quarterbacks that could go in that first round, and there's, I think, a lot of chatter from a lot of pundits in terms of that over-under number you talked about potential trades. I think there could be a lot because there's – teams like Denver, for example, we just talked about them in the last segment. You really want to roll with Jared Stidham and now Zach Wilson, or do you go take a run at one of these quarterbacks that's available? There's, you know, but in order to do that, they're likely going to have to trade up. And so I think that that's really what could happen here. And I haven't looked historically, but there could be as many as 5 quarterbacks going in the top dozen picks, which seems to be — that'd be pretty close to unprecedented. I'm trying to think back to that 2021 draft with — that was Trevor Lawrence, that was Zach Wilson, there was others. I can't recall exactly how many went and how high they all went, but there were a lot in the first round.
Too many.
Yeah, yeah. The only one that's really survived that, what, is Trevor Lawrence, right? That's — I shouldn't say survived, but flourished. And that's even debatable a little bit. I mean, he's up and down. He looks like he's a quarterback that's going to stick, but yeah, so I think that to me is one of the really interesting ones. There's mock drafts all over the place, and we're going to be talking about those today, tomorrow, Thursday. We're going to really give some coverage to the draft. I think we've got Jordan Dejani coming on Thursday from CBS Sports to talk a little bit about the draft. So I think that's the big byline, is what are we going to see in terms of teams trying to move up? The one that I'm really fascinated with, I still keep hearing the potential of the New York Giants maybe trading up and maybe making a run at a quarterback. But then you look at another mock draft and they've got them going for a receiver. It just varies depending upon who you're reading at the time.
Are you worried, Sam, about the Giants snaking us for the best tackle in the draft at number 6? Because I kind of am.
I'm worried about the Chargers, I think, maybe taking the best tackle, not the Giants. But, yeah, I am worried about the tackle being gone before the Titans pick at 7 there. And I do – I'd be kind of upset, I think, if you don't move out of 7 and Joe Alt isn't there.
There's it's interesting, too, that – because I'm looking at one of the mock drafts where they had Malik Nabers going to the Chargers. I've even seen, to John's point, Malik Nabers making it to the Titans if Joe Alt got picked right before them with the Giants. But I'm thinking about Harbaugh, who's been talking up J.J. McCarthy left and right, and I'm starting to piece that together. Maybe some of that's him trying to drum up trade interest for his pick, trying to get more assets, too. And so does that artificially bump J.J. McCarthy up in terms of team interest? I just don't get it. I get Penix, even with his injury history and his age, I get him more than I do McCarthy.
Why is that?
I just don't feel like McCarthy showed me. He was good for Michigan, but I mean, it just didn't feel like he showed me enough, like in kind of a pro set game, like Penix did at Washington.
I feel bad for J.J. McCarthy is why I asked, because everyone's made him the guy that everyone points to. It's like, this guy sucks, and I don't understand why. I know his numbers weren't great at Michigan, but like on the games I watched, and they were very limited, I watched maybe four Michigan games last year, but it was the Penn State game, it was the Ohio State game, and then the playoff games. Like, the Penn State game, they went the entire, basically, the last three quarters without passing the ball. They just ran it every play. But against Ohio State, man, I thought he made some really good throws. There was one in particular that had everybody gushing. It was a crossing route. He kind of threw it. The defender didn't turn his head, and it was, fitted into two defenders for a touchdown slash. The defender kind of ripped it away, and it was almost an interception, but it wasn't his fault at all. It was just a dime of a throw. I think to that, like, he showed some flashes there. I think back to the Alabama game, and he wasn't necessarily – they didn't score a bunch of points in the Alabama game, but, like, hey, chips were down. Game was on the line. Season was on the line. He had 3 minutes to go down the field to tie the game, and he did it easily. Went down the field to score. Scored to win it. And then the national championship, I thought he was good in that game. Nothing special, but showed some athleticism and did enough to win. I don't know. I think McCarthy – is getting unfairly judged just because of how boring Michigan's offense was. It's kind of how I feel.
I'm kind of with you on McCarthy. I feel like he's just getting dragged down because he got asked the least amount to like make those massive plays kind of out of all those quarterbacks. Like, I think Penix was out there throwing it 40 times a game, but like, I thought McCarthy, maybe he only has to make 10 or 12 big time throws a game, but I thought like he can deliver those at any time.
Yeah, I mean, I thought he was athletic, and I thought he had a strong arm, and I'm not acting like he is good because I'm always open. I don't know who's going to be good out of college into the NFL. Like, I don't try to have any super crazy takes there because I don't really know, and I don't want to look like an idiot, and I'm just be guessing, and it would just be, rolling the dice to see which one's good. But, like, when I see McCarthy, I don't see anything that disqualifies him, I guess. Like, every now and then you'll see a guy like, hey, Jake Locker – you could tell that guy wasn't going to be good in the NFL because he wasn't good in college. He wasn't accurate. He was athletic, but he couldn't, complete passes. I don't see that with McCarthy. I mean, he completed 72% of his passes last year. Now, a lot of those are probably wide open and easy throws, but, like, again, nothing that disqualified him. He didn't have a turnover problem. 22 touchdowns, 4 interceptions. Not a statue. Can run around, make some plays there. I've just been surprised that he's been everyone's kind of guy that they're pointing to. And like, no, this guy sucks. We know.
Yeah, I don't think he sucks. What I question is he a first-round pick? Perhaps. Is he a top 5 or 6 pick? That's the one I feel that's what's super debatable to me. I think he can absolutely be a serviceable and solid NFL quarterback, I don't know. It just feels like he is getting pushed very high in some mocks. Now, I've also seen him around 11 for a team like Minnesota, potentially. That makes a little more sense to me, but I don't think he sucks. I mean, I don't think that's the case. You can't play on a team that won the national title and throw for 25 touchdowns and, like you said, complete 72% of your passes on key plays. So I think that part of it, he deserves to be in the conversation. I just feel it's a little high.
Yeah, and if you're asking if he could be the 6th pick, and you're saying that, asking is he one of the 6 best players in the draft? No.
Yeah.
Of course not. But we all know quarterbacks are valuable. That's a very obvious statement when it comes to the NFL and the NFL draft. So if you are wanting a quarterback and you're wanting to roll the dice there and take a chance that this guy can turn into a solid starter, well, that means you have to take them earlier. It's kind of just the way that works out. But no, he's not a top 6 player in the draft, it doesn't feel like. But that doesn't necessarily matter because you'll have those teams reach and try to trade up and try to lock down their quarterbacks. I saw him have a little steam to even be the number 2 overall player taken, which I don't necessarily even think that's a realistic conversation. But he has been a name that's been, like, getting bet, where people think he's – that's been consistent since the combine, is that everyone came out of that saying, hey, go ahead and get ready. J.J. McCarthy is going to go a lot higher than you think he is. Is he the most intriguing prospect at this point in terms of draft position and where he ends up? Because it feels like the top 3 I feel pretty confident that Williams and then either May or Daniels are going to be three of the, maybe the first three players taken. Like, it feels like that's kind of slotted in. Now, maybe New England trades down and that gets a little crazy there, but like, I feel like those three quarterbacks are going to be the first three taken, and then I don't really know where J.J. McCarthy slots in.
I'm still, this just personally, I'm still most fascinated with Brock Bowers.
Okay.
And where he goes, just because I think he is a freak, and I think whoever drafts him is going to be thrilled they've got him. It's just a position that doesn't get as much notoriety, you know, because it's tight end. But, I mean, I view him as being potentially with the, in the right system, like someone that could be another, you know, version of like a Travis Kelce type player.
To me, I keep thinking about it is Drake May, honestly. I think that's a quarterback prospect that is super high ceiling, but I think a lot of people feel like there's a lot of risk to that. And, you know, I think there's a lot of rumors of teams kind of trading up and wanting to go get their guy. I've seen, you know, the Vikings interested in trying to go get a quarterback, and that one seems – the Vikings just are a team to me that I think I'm going to be watching in the coming days leading up to this, just because I think that they've obviously got a need and they've got some – super talented guys on their roster, and Sam Darnold is their quarterback right now, and you know, maybe they want that as kind of their bridge quarterback guy. But to me, the Vikings trading up for a guy like a Drake May and like setting him for a year under Sam Darnold seems super interesting to me.
Yeah, if you're the Vikings, I just don't know if you can trade up that high. Okay, I mean, I know you can, but I just like it, the price is going to be really, really steep to go from where they're at all the way up to number two, if they have to get there. Number three, you know, if the Commanders take Daniels instead. I don't think that's a foregone conclusion. I mean, I think it's very possible that the Commanders take Drake May. I mean, I think it's very possible.
I feel like Daniels is pretty locked into two. But, yeah, who knows?
Brock Bowers, the worst thing he ever did was stand next to Gronk. I have not thought of him as a – as an elite prospect ever since I saw that picture. And he is a monster. And, like, when you actually watch the film and watch what he did, I know the SEC defenses aren't as good as they once were, but, like, doing what he did in the SEC is still worth celebrating. He was still the best player on the field pretty much every time he was on the field. But when I saw just how little and frumpy he looked standing next to Gronk, I just kind of changed my perception of him. And maybe that's not fair.
Different style of play for sure.
Well, also like you know, 21-year-old kid versus a big monster, like one of the most physically.
Grow into that.
No, I know, but like he's, I imagine he'll gain some muscle though. Like I imagine, like if you'd put him in like some tight fitting clothes and like you know let him add like 5 or 10 pounds of muscle, he'd look a little different. Is that not the thing? Does that not happen in the NFL? Like guys will get stronger from.
I feel like you don't get much bigger once you go to the NFL.
Okay, maybe not. Maybe like yeah,
especially if you've been at Georgia for that long.
Yeah, like, maybe that Georgia weight program is got him at his max. Maybe I guess maybe you're onto something there.
I feel like any heavier he gets, he's just losing his speed. That is kind of his element to his game. That's his game breaker, and I don't know.
Once I saw that picture, I didn't want to see Bowers at number 7. He's been settled in at number 10 to the Jets ever since then. So
yeah, I've seen that a lot too.
Good luck in New York.
Hey, while we're on tight ends. And I mentioned Travis Kelce a minute ago. When you watch that Pelicans game tonight, Jonas Valanciunas.
He does look like Kelce.
I mean, yeah. I even
third Kelce brother.
Yeah, I showed it to my wife. I go, who's that look like? She immediately was like, Travis Kelce. Mm-hmm. I was like, they're definite lookalikes. Okay. Just saying.
You got me excited, but the Pelicans game's not till tomorrow, Bob.
It's not.
No. Tonight, if you're going to watch, you got to watch Mavs Clippers. And I don't know if I'm going to stay up late to watch Mavs Clippers.
Like Zion Williamson, that's the next tight end
you're
going to look for.
Yeah, I was like, where's this going? Larry Nance Jr., that guy has got some hops. He'd be a good red zone target. We'll talk some Tennessee baseball coming up after the break. Kirby Connell, the face of the pitching staff, joins us next. Stick with us.
Are you ready to play hard?
Tennessee baseball coming off of a big series win in Lexington. Set to take the field today before they play Missouri starting on Thursday. We're joined by the man who helped get that win in Game 3, the face of the pitching staff, Kirby Connell, friend of the morning show. Kirby, top of the morning to you.
Good morning. Good morning. Thank you for having me on here.
How did it feel going into that series against Kentucky? It's not something that happens very often at Tennessee anymore, but, you know, kind of, I don't want to say underdogs, but the lower-ranked team. Was that extra motivation? Did that feel weird as a Tennessee team going on the road and being, you know, lower-ranked? What was the mindset there?
I think Coach B set us up perfectly. He warned us before the series. We knew it was going to be a big week, especially coming off the LSU series. We knew it was going to be a big week, and we knew that, you know, Kentucky was pretty good. And we knew that, you know, going into it, it was going to be a three-round fight. It's just a matter of who could come out on the end and who could play all three games. And I think it helped on Saturday. You know, we lost on Friday, a tough one on Friday. Came out on Saturday. Came out really, really hot. And, you know, we got off our stool on Saturday, got off the stool and started throwing some punches. So for us is – we look at every single series as a three-round fight. So for us, it's, you know, you go into Sunday 1-1. It's just a one game, one round. Who can win? Who can stay the longest and come out with a win?
Morning, Kirby. I was thinking about you when in that game on Sunday. First of all, how's your arm feeling today? A couple days later.
Feels pretty good.
Good. I was wondering what's going through your head. You come in, you kind of had to help stop the bleeding, right? They were, you know, Kentucky was batting the ball around, and you come in and trigger an inning-ending double play, which we were talking about yesterday, saying that was kind of an unsung but key moment in that game, because then that allowed again stop the bleeding a little bit, and then Tennessee came in and the offense does what it does. When you're going in there and you're, you know, you get a couple pitches in and that kind of play happens, you know, does that feel like, obviously it probably feels like mission accomplished, but then, you know, what's going through your head then about going on to the next inning?
Yeah, you know, when you come in those situations like that, you know, your main goal is to try to get, you know, for me, if I come in with, you know, runner on first and second, first and third, bases loaded, try to get a ground ball, let defense play behind me, and, you know, try to limit the pitch count right there. You don't want to finish the inning in that scenario right there with like 15 pitches. You want to try to get it done in less than eight. So. Luckily, I was able to do that, and then, you know, get the offense back in there, because I knew we were going to get to the guy. It was just going to take us a few innings to get to it, and, you know, it just happened to be that inning, and then, you know, just be able to go back out there and, you know, throw strikes.
Yeah, walk us through the mindset of being out there, and, you know, you hear the phrase shut down innings, you know, after the offense scores, you're trying to go out there and, you know, kind of keep the momentum, but walk us through the mindset of, you know, you come in at 6-2. Then all of a sudden, by the time you go back out there, Tennessee has the lead, and you're staying out there, and the offense is still exploding, but Kentucky's battling, and they're scoring runs too. So I'm just curious in the mindset of coming in there to put out a fire, but then it switches to, okay, now I'm trying to nurse a lead because the offense has given me the lead back. How does that change your approach on the mound?
Yeah, with an offense like Kentucky, my main goal was, you know, just try to limit the damage. You know, they're gonna score runs, they're gonna get on base, they're gonna move runners. Just try to limit it as much as I can, just so I can let the offense get back in there and keep the bats hot. But you know, with Kentucky being, you know, as good as they are this year, and, you know, they have a lot of good hitters. They have a lot of good guys that can leave the yard. They can play small ball. They can leave the yard whenever they want. So for me, it was just try to limit the damage, try to keep guys off the base path.
Kirby, you were talking about that three-round fight mentality when you're coming into these SEC series, and y'all have done such a great job of being able to win those series on Sunday afternoons. Do you feel like with a team full of guys that have a lot of experience here, do you feel like that's a big advantage of y'all, you know, that you guys have over teams when you're coming down the stretch here in SEC play and heading towards the tournament?
I think with us being an older group as we are, I think being able to you know, experience games like that. You know, a lot of our guys, like our thing was, V mentioned it, it was, you know, the this past weekend was a regional, a super regional kind of weekend. It was, you're going to play three games, you know you're going to play three games, and it's just a matter of, you know, who can win two out of the three. And no matter how you do it, somebody's got to win two of them. So if it means you lose the first game, win the second one, that means you got a third round. You got that third round. You got to go out there and, you know, play the best baseball you can.
The knockout punch came from a tag into Marcus Phillips, you know, who got his first conference action, came in, slammed the door. Just talk about his performance there coming in and being able to get that final out.
Yeah, you know, it was really, really huge out of him. I think that was, like B said, you know, give him some wise words. And I told him when he came in, I said, you're the right guy for this. I mean, that you've earned this spot, and you put in a lot of work, so go out there and do it. And, you know, I think it was very, very awesome and very, very huge to see out of him. You know, we all had a lot of trust in him in that moment, and we knew he was going to do the best that he could, and whatever happened, happened.
Feels like that's got to get him some more opportunities, right? Like when you come in and perform in that level, like now I think you can add him to the rotation of arms coming out of that bullpen in big moments.
Yeah, he's a really big arm, as you saw, you know, throwing 97, 98. It's just a matter of, you know, getting him in that right mindset is, hey, go out there and throw that thing over the whitetail as hard as you possibly can, and you'll be perfect.
Kirby, can you just talk a little bit about that response on Saturday? You know, you kind of come off of a game on Friday that you feel like you wish you were on the winning end of, but you then come out at the start on Saturday and you really just kind of smack them in the mouth. Can you talk about that mindset that you guys had coming into Saturday morning and kind of maybe what that message was on Friday night?
Yeah, you know, our you know, Coach B is, you know, we lose a game, two runs, one run, whatever. It's you know, our main thing is, you know, let them celebrate. You know, if they celebrate too much, or, you know, if we just gotta be ready to go out there and throw the first punch. And I think that's what Simo and Burke did, as you saw. And then Billy, and then KT, and then Dylan, and then Dean. You know, it was just, you know, we're just stacking them on. It was, you know, Simo and Burke let it off with a homer, and then it was like, all right, now what can we do? Like at that moment, it kind of felt like all nine players were going to hit a home run right after each other. And, you know, for us, it was just, you know, bring the energy in the dugout. And I think that's what we did, you know, this whole weekend. You know, it takes every single person on the team that went with us, that's even at home, it took every single person. And V mentioned that it was, you know, no matter the role that you had, it took every single one of us out there to win both those games and bring the energy in all three games.
Christian Moore's pretty good at baseball, huh?
Yeah, he's pretty good at he's pretty good in the box and on defense. You know, that man has helped, you know, us defensive-wise and offensive-wise in times that we really need him.
All right, you mentioned it, so I feel like it's fair game. You talked about Kentucky and the cheerleading. Do you think Vitello was talking about Kentucky when he said that they're not the cheerleading team, or that you guys aren't the cheerleading team, with all due respect?
I got no comment on that. You know, that's V's comment. I have no comment on anything that, you know, that they may have done this weekend.
You know, sometimes a no comment says everything we need to know.
All right.
It is what it is. You know, they play baseball a certain way, and we play baseball a certain way, and it's, you know, it's just how it is. It's baseball.
Yeah, that was still good getting out of that weekend with that win for the series. We're being joined by Kirby Connell. Hey, Kirby, looking ahead to this week. So, Western Carolina tonight, right? And then Missouri, which looks a little, at least statistically, looks a little offensively challenged, but has some pitching. But this is one of those that, of course, you want to go out and win every game you can. But this is one that it feels like if there's ambitions to really make some noise at the top of the conference standings, make sure you lock up a great seed for the conference tournament, all those things. The mindset of trying to sweep this one feels pretty strong from a fan perspective. You know, again, I know you guys approach it like you want to win them all, but any different approach with this kind of team versus one like last week that was a kind of a battle royale with Kentucky?
No, it's you know, we look at every single SEC weekend as a three-round fight, no matter who it is. And we're going to go out there and, you know, like you said, we're going to try to win three games, but, you know, we're going to look at it as, you know, take it one game at a time and then one pitch at a time. You know, go out there, try to win every single pitch, and, you know, whoever can do that the most times is usually going to win.
It's been pretty fun, Kirby, to watch kind of this Tennessee home run record go back and forth between Christian Moore and Blake Burke here. You know, just kind of wondering, is there any sort of friendly competition or any action within the locker room on kind of who ends up in the lead at the end of the season there with that home run record, whether it be Christian Moore or Blake Burke, and then kind of talk about just, you know, how those two work off of each other and their mindset and how they can make each other better?
You know, I wouldn't say there's any, you know, friendly competition. It's just two guys, you know, trying to be the best they can in the box. And, you know, just I think it's awesome because everybody around them, like in the locker room and the dugout, is, you know, we're cheering them on. And it's just we treat it like it's, you know, their first AB of their college career. And, you know, if they hit a home run, they hit a home run. If they hit a single, they hit a single. It's just, we're going to treat it the same way. We're going to, you know, celebrate whenever they do. But, no, it's our thing is you go up there and, you know, whatever their mindset is and whatever their goal is for that game or, you know, approach is, you know, it's going to stay the same. You know, they're not going to try to leave the yard and, you know, say, oh, well, I want to be the home run champ. No, it's they're doing it for the team, and it's truly amazing to see.
Walk me through the process of coming out with the walk-up songs for batters and the, you know, your song coming out of the bullpen. Do you fill out a form at the beginning of the year and then you're locked in? Because I hear the same songs every game, and I'm wondering if we can get some variety. Are you guys, like, contractually obligated now to keep them the same the entire year?
I like to keep mine the same. I've kept mine the same for the last 3.5 years. So I think it's, you know, it's a walk-up song. It's whatever you feel like you can focus the most on and whatever you can, you know, hype yourself up to. But no, I think it stays the same. And I think there's a lot of guys that, you know, really enjoy its songs. And I think sometimes the fans even enjoy them, and because, like, they know, like, when somebody comes up to bat, they start singing their walk-up song because they know it's going to be that song. And I think it's, you know, I think it's cool to, you know, see how the, you know, Vol Nation reacts to some of the walk-up songs and how they, you know, interact with them.
Are you guys doing the Billy Amick stroke clap in the dugout whenever he's coming up?
Yes, sir. So they actually played in Kentucky. They played Billy's walk-up song during, like, the middle of an inning. And I was in the bullpen, so I could see the Tennessee fans, and everybody was doing it. And they immediately turned the song off. And I loved it.
That's great.
Seemed like a lot of Tennessee fans made the trip. It was a fun win to watch from a fan perspective. It was always nice to put Kentucky in their place. Tony's comments about their antics, wink, wink, his no comments that we just got from Kirby. It was extra sweet getting a top five road series. Best of luck this weekend. Hopefully you get a rest tonight. Hopefully you don't have to get out there and pitch tonight. You can keep that arm iced up. But Kirby, thanks for joining us. Anything you want to plug on the way out?
No, I think we pretty much hit everything. Just thank you for having me on here.
Appreciate you, Kirby.
Thank you, Kirby.
Thank you.
Hour two in the books. We'll kick off hour three. What do we got on docket in hour three, Bob? What do we got? College basketball?
A little college basketball, because there's still a lot of activity swirling around. We've got our own portal drama going on, but there's a lot still happening. That's just the state of the game. And then we're going to continue on with some NFL draft talk likely too.
Stick with us. It's the morning show on Fan Run Radio.